book of Mark, chapter 5, read verses 21 through verse 34. It's Mark's account of what we read this morning. This morning we read Luke's account and applied what we read as a picture of salvation. Tonight we want to look at it from the standpoint of the Lord's people. But in verse 21 through verse 34, when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him, and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. Again, this is Mark's account. We see Matthew in Matthew chapter 9 also gives his account. And though it is a separate record, it is a part of the record of a man named Jairus, whose daughter God, of course, raised. And what is recorded here is a testimony of faith and perseverance in the face of obstacles, an illustration of one who had a personal experience of Jesus Christ, a truth that is illustrated all through the Word of God is that there are no hopeless predicaments with the Lord. Your situation is not hopeless. Your storm is not hopeless. Your sin is not hopeless. The truth illustrated time and time again is that we need miracles in our lives. And that Jesus Christ is the power and sufficiency that is greater than any situation, greater than any need in our life. And our text describes what appears to be an impossible and hopeless situation. And what we have here is one of the many biblical accounts of Jesus Christ as the great miracle worker. I want to speak this evening on our need of miracles and the miracle worker. First of all, just by way of background to the text, what we read here took place in Capernaum. In verse 21, we read that when Jesus arrived in Capernaum, much people gathered unto him. And in verse 24, we read, much people followed him and thronged or pressed upon him. In Luke 8, in verse 40, we read, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him. So excitement was in the air upon the return of Jesus Christ to Capernaum. Now, in order to understand the excitement of this moment, we need to consider the background leading up to Jesus coming to Capernaum at this time. In Mark chapter 1, verses 21 and 22, Jesus is in Capernaum, and he is teaching in a synagogue. And we read, and they were astonished, or they were amazed at his doctrine. While in that synagogue, verses 23 through 26 of chapter 1, he cast out a demon from a demon-possessed man. Notice the effect that this had upon the people in verse 27 and 28 of chapter 1. And they were all amazed, insomuch they questioned among themselves, saying, what thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region round about Galilee. So Jesus cast the demon out of this man in this particular synagogue. News began to spread, not only through Capernaum, but all through Galilee. From the synagogue, he went to the house of Peter, verses 29 through 31. And just with the apostles present, he healed Peter's mother-in-law. However, that same evening, at that same house, we see a great multitude had gathered. Notice verse 32. And at evening, at even, when the sun did set, they brought unto him all that were diseased. So they heard that he was in the house, and them that were possessed with devils. And all the city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many that were sick of divers diseases, and cast out many devils, and suffered not the devils to speak, because they knew him. So a great multitude gathered that night at that house, and there was a mass healing that took place. The excitement about Jesus was building in Capernaum. And in verse 37, the apostles said to Jesus, all men seek thee. All men seek thee. And then in verse 38, we see Jesus and the apostles leaving Capernaum. And he said unto them, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also. For there, therefore, came I forth. So they leave Capernaum. Coming to chapter 2 in verse 1, Jesus is back in Capernaum. And again, that means he'd been there before. And again, he entered Capernaum after some days. So they left for a few days, and they came back. Notice verse 2. And straightway, many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them. So again, the excitement was building that Jesus was back in Capernaum. Brought to Jesus that day in that house, they carried a man on a pallet, a paralytic, whom Jesus miraculously healed. Following that, Jesus again went into the synagogue. Would be the same synagogue that he cast out the demon from the demon-possessed man. And in chapters 3, verses 1 through 5, we see in the synagogue that day he miraculously heals a man with a withered hand. The Pharisees and the Herodians then conspired against Christ. But notice in chapter 3, verse 7, "But Jesus withdrew himself with his disciples to the sea, and a great multitude from Galilee followed him, and from Judea, and from Jerusalem, and from Idumea, and from beyond Jordan, and about Tyre and Sidon, a great multitude, when they had heard the great things he did, came unto him. And he spake to his disciples that a small ship should wait on him because of the multitude, lest they should throng him. For he had healed many, insomuch that they pressed upon him for to touch him, as many as had plagues." By the time you get to chapter 4, the multitude had grown to the extent that Jesus and the apostles had run out of room. And they had to get in a boat and go a little bit from shore. And there Jesus would teach the people in parables. And all that's recorded in chapter 4. In verse 35 of chapter 4 through verse 41, Jesus and the apostles, after Christ is taught in parables, they head across the sea. So they're leaving Capernaum. They're leaving Capernaum again. And in chapter 5 and verse 1, they arrive in the city of the Gadarenes. They arrive in Gadara. And we all know what happened there. A demon-possessed man met them. Jesus cast out a legion of demons from this man who was a maniac. And he caused the demons to enter into a herd of swine, who consequently ran down a hill very violently into the sea, where they were drowned. This infuriated the people because they had lost their hogs. And they began to plead with Jesus that he depart. We see that in verse 17. So Jesus gets back into the boat and crosses back over into Capernaum. So he's there again. He's back, and again, the excitement builds. And as he arrives, we see much people gathered unto him. In this gathering of people, we're told of a particular individual in verses 22 and 23 by the name of Jairus. His 12-year-old daughter is sick, and she is about to die. And Jairus is pleading with Jesus on behalf of his daughter. In verse 24, we see Jesus and this multitude of people heading to the house of Jairus. And Jesus is pressed on every side. Now, there were those in that crowd who were there out of loving gratitude to Jesus. Their loved ones were healed. Perhaps they themselves were healed. But no doubt, in that multitude, there were those who were there out of gratitude to Christ. Others were there out of hope. Perhaps they had an illness, or they had a loved one that had an illness, and they were there out of hope, hoping that Jesus would heal them or their loved one. And then, of course, there were many who were just curiosity seekers. But they're all there, and they're all heading to the house of Jairus. And they're all excited because they believe a miracle is going to take place. Jesus is going to heal this 12-year-old girl. And beginning with verse 25, the journey to the house is interrupted by a woman that had a great need. And her account becomes a part of the account of Jairus. So consider the account of this woman, and again in verse 25, and a certain woman. We do not know her name. We do not know anything about her family. We do not know anything about her background other than what we're told here of her sickness. We are told of her condition. We are told of her need. Her condition, we see in verse 25, and a certain woman which had an issue or a flow of blood 12 years. She's not known by her name. She's known by her problem. She's known by her situation. May I say, if you're known by your problem or situation, you have a big problem. You have a dire situation. Unlike Jairus, she does not have a dying daughter. But she does have a problem that she can't fix and that no one else can fix. She has a flow of blood. She's had this for 12 years. Again, it's referred to in verse 29 as a plague, something that caused her great torment. And if you read the book of Leviticus, chapter 25, you'll see some of the torment that she probably experienced. But her need was great. Her need was real. Her situation was very serious. Her situation was desperate. Her condition was long-standing, 12 years. Her condition was of a continuous nature. For 12 years, she had been in anguish. For 12 years, she had misery in her life. For 12 years, there was heartache and desolation in her life. For 12 years, she was vexed and tormented. Physically, emotionally, socially, financially, and spiritually, because she would have been banned from the house of God. During those 12 years, we read that she tried many remedies. We read in verse 26 that she had suffered many things of many physicians. She would go to one physician after another. She would be given different advice. And the Bible says that she suffered from these remedies, from these false remedies. God's people bring a lot of suffering into their lives because they seek false remedies. And this woman suffered many things of many physicians. We also read in verse 26 that she spent all that she had and was nothing bettered. In fact, it says that she grew worse. She not only didn't get better, she got worse as time went on. Now, adding to her distress and her misery was the fact that her hopes and her expectations were crushed over and over again. I'm sure every time she went to a physician, she hoped, this is the one that will be able to help me get better. This is where I can find a cure. This is where my life can be put back together. But it wouldn't take long. And she would soon discover that whatever that physician prescribed was not working. So she'd try someone else. Until eventually she ran out of money. But she went 12 years running to and fro without remedy to her problem. If you look at her, her health is gone. Her money is gone. She's getting worse with each passing day. Her life is withering away. She has a problem. She has a problem that no one can fix. No one. What did she do? No one had to inform her, remind her what she was going through. No one had to inform her or remind her what she had been through. It was all painfully real to her. She had a desperate need. And she keenly felt that need. We read in verse 27 that she came to Jesus. We saw this morning that she heard, and then she came. What prompted her to come? Again, in verse 27, it says that she had heard of Jesus. Now, Jesus, as we've already seen, had done numerous miracles in Capernaum. And that's probably what she heard. She'd probably heard how that Jesus cast out the demon of a demon-possessed man in the synagogue. How he healed Peter's mother-in-law. How that evening multitudes were brought to him. And he healed many. And how he healed the deformed hand of a man in the synagogue. She had heard of Jesus. This woman who felt hopeless and no doubt unworthy. Because of her condition, she would have been lonely and isolated and alienated. She heard of Jesus. This woman with her overwhelming problem, with her overwhelming need, this woman who was burdened down after 12 years and was hurting, heard of Jesus. No doubt she's tired of her life. She's tired of it. Oh, that some of God's people would get tired of their life. But this woman was tired of her life. And more than anything, she wanted to be freed from her dreadful condition. And she heard of Jesus. And she began to think. And she began to believe. This Jesus, who has healing power in his hands, and whose voice has healing authority, certainly he can heal me. This Jesus, he can set me free. This Jesus, who is greater than all, he can fix me. He can fix me. And he can put my life back together. And he can make me whole. She believed. And she knew with all of her heart, verse 28, if I may touch his clothes, I shall be whole. Her desire is wholeness. She wants her life put back together. She wants her life fixed. And she believes that if she can just touch his clothes, that this man had such power that her life would be fixed. That he could do what 12 years of physicians could not do. That he could do what 12 years of expense could not do. So painfully aware of her need and believing that he could fix her, she longs. She longs for Jesus Christ. So much so that as soon as she heard that he was back in Capernaum, she came. And her coming is described. Again, as you look at this woman, she would be no doubt very pale. Her body is wasting away. And in verse 27, it says that she came in the press behind. That means all the people were in front of her. This means everywhere. In front of her were people. Everywhere in front of her was that which was blocking her way and impeding her from getting to the one that she just knew, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. But she came in the press behind, and all of these people are blocking her way. There is no clear path. There is no easy way. Everywhere she turns, somebody is in the way. And this woman, she is very weak. She is very frail. From the fact that she touched the hem of his garment, more than likely she crawled through that mob of people. And the whole time she's believing, and she's saying to herself, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. She desperately needs a miracle that only he can do. Everything she needs is in him. Knowing this, she makes her way through that crowd with a passionate determination, wanting desperately to be set free from this dreadful disease and plague. She is saying, I've got to get to Jesus. I've got to get to him. I'm weak, I'm frail, but I've got to get to Jesus. And she is determined to reach him. And in her determination, she would not allow the people to stop her. She would not allow her pain to stop her. She would not allow her affliction to stop her. She would not allow her problem or her weakness to stop her. If I may but touch his clothes, I shall be whole. I've got to get to Jesus. And she presses forward toward Jesus. She would not stop. We don't know how long this process took. But we do know that there was no clear path. There was no easy way. But eventually she's near enough to stretch forth her hand and touch the hem of his garment. And from what is recorded, I believe we can safely say that this was not just a passing touch. This is not just a brush. But she, with great hope and confidence, clutched and grasped the hem of his garment. And there were many who were pressing up against him and touching him. But when she touched the border of his garment, Jesus stopped. And the entire procession stopped. And Jesus said, verse 30, who touched my clothes? The apostles respondent, verse 31, "Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest, Thou who touched me?" They couldn't believe that Jesus would ask such a question. Luke, in his account, in chapter 8 and verse 46, records that Jesus, in response to the statement of the apostles, said, "Somebody hath touched me." So though there were many touching him, she touched him in a way that no one else did in that crowd. She did not merely throng and press upon him. She touched him, believing, "If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole." She came and touched him, believing in her heart, persuaded in her soul, that he was able to perform the miracle that she needed. She came and she touched him, believing in her heart, persuaded in her soul, that he was able to set her free, that he was able to transform her life. She came and she touched him, believing in her heart and persuaded in her soul that he was able to do what 12 years of doctors, 12 years of finances could not do. Now perhaps the majority in that crowd had no real soul hunger for Jesus. But this woman possessed a passion, a fervor, a yearning for him. She longs to get near to him, close enough where she can touch him. So she makes her way through that immense crowd of people. Again, all the while she knows, "If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole." And she reaches forth her frail hand and grasped the hem of his garment, and a miracle took place. Everything this woman needed was in him. And she touched the hem of his garment. And as soon as she did, what she needed was transferred from him to her. We read in verse 29, and straightway, immediately, in an instant, the fountain of her blood was dried up. 12 years of doctors could not do that. 12 years of finances could not do that. But a touch, and that flow of blood stopped. And it says, verse 29, "And she felt in her body," her whole body, "that she was healed of that plague." Verse 30, Jesus, we see that virtue flowed out of Christ. What flowed out of Christ that day was greater than the disease and plague that had devastated the body and the life of this woman. And may I say, that's still so today. What flows out of him is greater than any disease, greater than any plague, greater than anything that is wrong with you and I. 12 years of disease and plague, gone. 12 years of anguish, 12 years of suffering, gone. 12 years of heartache. All gone. She felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Oh, what she felt that day. We can feel the same thing if we do what she did. Believe, come, reach forth, and grasp Him. You'll notice that this day, this woman was changed from the inside out. She could feel in her body. She was changed from the inside out. We don't need superficial change. We need change from the inside out. And she received assurance from Christ, verse 34. Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. And then he said to her, go in peace. Before this, her life was, the last 12 years had been turmoil. But he says, go in peace. Go in peace. The disease, the turmoil, the stress, the burden, they're all gone. Now to make application, and we'll close. This is a testimony of faith and perseverance in the face of overwhelming need and obstacles. She didn't have the same need as Jairus, but she still had a need that only Jesus could fix. And so it is today. It is an account that ought to inspire and encourage God's people in their time of need and in their time of impossible situations to press toward Christ. Believing all the while, if I may touch Him, He can fix me. He can fix it. Here we are tonight in God's house, so blessed of God. Here we are with our Bibles, glad to be saved. But underneath it all, we all have some issues. We all have some problems, some overwhelming burdens. The list could go on and on and on. They may be our own issues. They may be the issues of others. But we all have these things. This woman had something terribly wrong with her. May I say tonight that we all have things terribly wrong with us. There isn't anyone here that does not have something. And I guarantee you, if you really look, you'll find more than one thing that is terribly wrong with us. What was wrong with this woman was eroding away her life. And we all have things wrong with us. Things that erode away spirituality. Destroy spirituality. You can feel yourself getting near to the Lord, but then you've got this problem. This thing that's wrong with us. And before long, we've withdrawn from the Lord. We all have a plague. a disease that torments us and that robs us spiritually. The question is not whether or not any one of us have issues. That's not the question. The question is not whether or not any one of us have something terribly wrong with us, that we would be better off if they were fixed. This woman knew, I will be better off if this flow of blood can be stopped. That's true of each one of us. We'd be better off if there were some things that were just fixed in our lives. But most people, and I'm talking to God's people, don't want to go there. They don't want to think about what might need fixing in their life. Don't have any problem seeing what needs to be fixed in everybody else. But don't you dare come near and start talking to me what needs to be fixed in my life. This woman knew that she had a problem. A problem that had to be fixed. And she knew there was only one who could fix it. And she wanted it fixed. I don't believe too many people are interested in being fixed. They really aren't. Not interested at all. Their problems bring all kinds of misery into their lives, but they don't see the real issue. It's what's wrong in our life. The question again is not whether or not we have issues, not whether or not we need things to be fixed, but what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? We need to be a people who believe and are absolutely persuaded that Jesus is greater than any issue I have. Jesus is greater than anything that is wrong with me. And He can fix it. But many are like this woman. Perhaps they have an honest moment in their life and they realize, you know something, I'm not perfect. And they realize, I've got some issues, I've got some problems. So what do? They start searching out the remedies that man offers. They try to fix themselves. I'm not talking about physical issues. I'm not talking about medical issues. I'm talking about spiritual issues. And what we need to do is believe He can fix me. He can fix me. When each one of us think in our minds, what is the first thing that comes to your mind when you think, what in my life needs to be fixed? Hopefully something comes to each person's mind. If not, you pray for all the rest that need fixing. But something comes to our mind. If only this were fixed in my life, I would be better off spiritually. I would grow spiritually. I would be more like Christ. Now, knowing that you have these issues, these things that need to be fixed, do you believe that Jesus can fix them? If so, we'll be like this woman. We will determine, no matter what no matter who is in the way. No matter what or who tries to stop me or slow me down. I have an issue. I have some things that are terribly wrong with me that are robbing me of spirituality, and I've got to get it to Jesus because He can fix it. That needs to be our life. And there may not seemingly be a clear path. There may not be an easy way to get to Jesus. But our attitude simply needs to be, I'm going to press on toward Him because I have this issue. I'm not talking about anyone else's issues that you know. I'm talking about our own personal issues. What is wrong with us? And you ever ask yourself sometimes, what is wrong with me? Don't ask yourself that, because you won't give an honest answer. Ask the Lord, what is wrong? And He'll tell you. Don't even ask your friends, what is wrong with me? Because they don't know. Go to the one who knows. And if you want fixed, go to Him. I learned a long, long time ago, and it's made my life easier. I can't fix, and I can't change anybody else. I can't fix myself. But I know the one who can. And with all of my stuff, and there is plenty of stuff, I must get to Jesus. Because He can. Because He can. So look at this woman. Pressing toward Christ. With outstretched hand. And oh, may that be our life. May that always be our life. Pressing toward Christ with outstretched hand. Even when you and I are as close to God as it seems possible, there's still things wrong in this heart. There's still things wrong in this mind. There's still things wrong with this personality. So we need to always be pressing toward Christ. With outstretched arm, with outstretched hand, knowing He can fix me. He can fix me. Which leads, of course, to the next question. Do we want to be fixed? Do we really, truly want to be fixed? Or are we content with just every now and then putting a Band-Aid on it? Do we really, truly want to be fixed? If so, move toward Him. Don't let anything stop you. I have always found, anytime you are determined to move toward Christ, there will be obstacles everywhere. Everywhere. But the desire has to be greater than the obstacle. And you just keep on pressing toward Christ, knowing, if I can just touch Him, He can make me whole. Remember what Jesus asked the man at the pool of Bethesda? He asked him a very direct question. And we've preached on this. He said, wilt thou be made whole? And what did the man say? He never answered the question. He said, when I'm going to the pool, others jump in before me. Wilt thou be made whole? And the immediate response is, well, it's so-and-so's fault. You'll never be fixed with that attitude. Never. The only right answer to that question is yes, Lord. Wilt thou be made whole? Yes, Lord, I want to be whole. I want to be right. I want to be what I ought to be. God help us to move toward Christ with an outstretched hand, knowing that He is and He has what we need. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.